Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African football. For the fifth month in a row, the World Cup-bound Carthage Eagles of Tunisia are the highest-ranked African team. In the May rankings released by FIFA, World Football's governing body, the Tunisians are 14th overall and first on the continent. Another World Cup-bound team, the Lions of Teranga from Senegal, are next at 28th overall. The Democratic Republic of Congo is at 38th overall, followed by three more World Cup-bound teams, Morocco at 42, Egypt at 46, and Nigeria at 47. For reaction to Nigeria's ranking, reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt talked with the sports editor of Silver Bird Media Group, Jide Alibi.
It's nothing new. It's like what we had last month. It wasn't like there's a shift or anything. For me, it's a blessing in disguise. We're going to this World Cup as an underdog, even though our game against Argentina has really exposed us now. But at the end of the day, we have a very youthful side. Let's hope that, the coach will get his selection right at the World Cup and mother luck will be on the side of the Eagles.
The other countries that are playing with Nigeria in Group B, Argentina, Croatia, Iceland, are well placed up there in the ranking. Do we have any reason or cause to fear?
Definitely. And most people are talking about Argentina, but I would say we should worry ourselves more about Iceland and Croatia. Croatia boasts of some of the best footballers in the world. In fact, one of the best midfielders in the world in the mold of Luka Modric. You cannot write down Mandzukic, one of the very best. Rakitic. These are guys that can game changers and game winners any day. We should worry ourselves more about Croatia and Iceland and less of Argentina. Not to say we're not, we've played Argentina four times now. So we know what they're bringing onto the party. But for Croatia, we're not sure. For Iceland, we don't even know them at all. It will be a very, very, very wrong thing if we underestimate Iceland especially. Because if you notice, we've not really been talking about Iceland. And Iceland is one team that we should be worried about. So that what happened to us at France 98 when we met Denmark after beating Spain, we were so excited. And Denmark messed up the World Cup for us. So we should be very worried.
With 27 days to the commencement of the World Cup, what's your impression about the build-up to the big mundial by Nigeria?
Well, for the first time in a very long time, Nigeria seemed to get it right. We've not had the kind of preparation this present squad are having, especially what we had in South Africa in 2010, when players were more concerned about what allowance to be paid, appearance fees were not paid, and money were flown in from Nigeria, which, destabilized the psychology of the players. We were all there, we saw what happened. This time around, they're working towards ensuring that before they get to the World Cup, they get their appearance fees so that full concentration will be on the World Cup itself, on the matches. So if we're able to clear that off, we know that, okay, these players have 100% concentration, which will be positive for us on the field of play. This particular team, if not the youngest in the World Cup, is the youngest Nigeria's ever produced.
Do you think is it a plus for Nigeria presenting one of the youngest teams in the World Cup?
Yes, it is. It is. You recall what Coach Onigbide took to the 2002 World Cup. That's where we discovered the likes of Enyama and a host of other young players. It's a very positive thing. If you look at most developed team, look at the German team, for instance, they present a youthful side most times. Those youthful side will now grow into the various World Cups. At the end of the day, by the time they peak, out of three tournaments, they'll pick one or two. So if we can also begin to do things like that, let's have these young guys, most of them first time they're going to the World Cup. If we win it, fine. If we don't win it, we know that we're building a team that can represent and pick trophies, not just the World Cup. The Nations Cup is also around the corner. But if you have young sides that are promising, then you know that, okay, at least if we get to the quarterfinals, this team getting to the quarterfinals now, beefing them up in 4 years' time, can win the World Cup. So it's a good side. It's a good positive sign for Nigeria.
That's G-Day Alibi, the sports editor of Silverbird Media Group. And G-Day was talking with reporter Iron Mike Imbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. And I'd be remiss if I didn't report how at the end of G-Day's chat with Iron Mike, he had a special shout-out for yours truly.
Oh, the great Sonny Young. Well, Sonny Young would remember Jay the Alibi, the host from the coast, and I give a toast to the most from coast to coast on Villa FM back in the days. It's been a while I heard, I spoke to Sonny Young. But, Sonny, if you're listening, this is the man that calls the young who is never young. Stay blessed, bro.
Thanks, G-Day. You stay blessed too, bro. Stay blessed, G-Day. I'm Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for that shout out, bro. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. With 27 days to go until the World Cup football tournament kicks off in Russia, how about another fun fact for our VOA listeners? 27 also was the number of goals scored by Hungary at the 1954 World Cup, the most by a team at a single World Cup tournament. The Hungarians were known as the Golden Team, the Magnificent Magyars, the Mighty Magyars, and the Magical Magyars. The Magyars were heavy favorites to lift the World Cup trophy in 1954 in Switzerland, but they weren't magical, mighty, or magnificent enough in the final. West Germany beat Hungary 3-2 in what's described as one of the greatest World Cup upsets in history. It was the first of Germany's four World Cup championships, with other titles to follow in 1974, 1990, and 2014. And defending champion Germany goes to Russia next month as one of the favorites to lift the trophy. The Germans are in Group F, along with Mexico, Sweden, and South Korea. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with more African football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Morocco coach Javier Renard has announced a provisional list of 23 players and three reserves that will make up the North African team who will return to the World Cup for the first time since 1998. Younes Belhanda, Hakim Ziyech, and Mehdi Benatia are among the star names in Morocco's World Cup squad, but Sofiane Boufal of Southampton is left out. The team will begin their preparations in Rabat on the 24th of May before taking part in three warm-up matches prior to the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia. Javier Renard's Atlas Lions will play Ukraine on the 31st of May and Slovakia on the 4th of June, both games in Geneva, Switzerland, before taking on Estonia in Tallinn on the 9th of June. Elsewhere, Senegal coach Aliou Cissé also announced his provisional squad on Thursday, with Liverpool star Sadio Mane and Napoli centre-back Kalidou Koulibaly heading the Lions of Teranga list. The West Africans are returning to the World Cup for the first time since 2002 when they made it to the quarterfinals. Cissé's team will prepare for the World Cup with two friendlies. They will first face Luxembourg on the 31st of May before playing a warm-up game against fellow World Cup-bound side Croatia on the 8th of June in Zagreb. CAF President Ahmed Ahmed was among the top dignitaries that witnessed the Nelson Mandela's centenary match between South Africa champions Mamelodi Sundowns against Spanish giant Barcelona, played on Wednesday night. The match, which Barcelona won 3-1, was to honor South Africa's former president Nelson Mandela, who would have turned 100 years this year. We're still with football news as Kenya's national team, the Harambee Stars, will play Swaziland and Equatorial Guinea in international friendly matches in readiness for the Crunch 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifier against Ghana set for September. The Harambee Stars will take on Swaziland on May 25th, while the contest against the Naslek National of Equatorial Guinea will be on May 28th. Both games will be played in Nairobi. And in women's football, Nigeria's women's senior football team, the Super Falcons, have commenced preparation for the 2018 African Women Cup of Nations qualifiers against the Gambia. The two-leg fixture will take place between the 4th to the 12th of June. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African athletics, Lusapo April of South Africa and Georgina Rono of Kenya will start among the favorites to win the men's and women's titles in Sunday's Riga Marathon in Latvia. April has a personal best of 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 32 seconds, which he set while winning the 2013 Hanover Marathon in Germany. Meanwhile, Rono also has a win in Hanover, as well as a women's marathon title in Eindhoven, the Netherlands. She set her personal best of 2 hours, 21 minutes, and 39 seconds at the 2012 Frankfurt Marathon in Germany, where she finished second behind Ethiopia's Meselech Melkamu. Meanwhile, the men's field in Riga also includes Kenya's Joseph Munwoki, who won the overall title last year in Riga in 2 hours, 12 minutes, and 14 seconds. The organizers in Latvia say more than 35,000 runners from 70 countries are expected to test their speed and endurance on Sunday. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs resume Saturday night in Cleveland, Ohio, where the Cleveland Cavaliers will host the Boston Celtics in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Celtics won the first two games in Boston by scores of 108-83 and 107-94 to take a 2-0 lead in the best-of-seven series. And the Western Conference Finals will pick back up on Sunday night in Oakland, California, where the defending champion Golden State Warriors host the Houston Rockets. The Warriors won the first game of the series in Houston, 119-106, but the Rockets evened things back up in Game 2, winning 127-105. Joining us now for some NBA talk is sports reporter Dan Friedel. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Sonny. Good to be here. I'm feeling a little bit of NBA withdrawal with no games the last couple days, and looking forward to see how the Cavs manage against the Celtics tomorrow.
Well, let's begin with your beloved Cavs, Dan. They seem to be kind of up against it, facing a 2-0 deficit. Do you expect the Cavs to make some adjustments in Game 3?
I mean, I am worried about the Cavs. My friends, my family members back in Cleveland are even more worried than I am. I mean, you look at the game the other night against the Celtics, Game 2, LeBron had his typical outstanding game that he's had during these playoffs. And, you know, going into the fourth quarter, the Cavs should have been ahead by 10 or 15 points. And they weren't. They gave up, a 14-point deficit to the Celtics in the third quarter, and the Celtics cruised the rest of the way in the fourth. You get 42 points and a triple-double from LeBron, 22 points from Kevin Love. You've got to get more from the rest of the team. And I feel like the Cavs are going to be a couple of players short this year. It'll be sad because it's very possible this could be LeBron's last couple games with the Cavs. They might win one game in this series, but it looks like Boston is just too deep and they've got a lot of up-and-coming players and really great coach and Brad Stevens. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston finishes the series in 5 games.
Dan, you used that expression that LeBron and the Cavs might be a couple players short. Well, one player they're short of is Kyrie Irving. Last year, he played for the Cavs with LeBron, and they beat the Celtics at this stage. This year, Kyrie is on the sidelines. He's been injured, and so he's on the Celtics bench cheering on his teammates. What about the Kyrie factor? Was he sort of that wingman for LeBron last year that LeBron kind of desperately needs right now?
Yeah, to me, the difference between the Cavs teams from the last couple of seasons, including their championship season, and this year is that they just don't have that ability to create one-on-one, you know, outside of LeBron taking the ball and driving the lane. They, you know, Kyle Korver has a lot of experience as an efficient three-point shooter, and J.R. Smith, same kind of thing for him, but they need to get the ball from somebody else. And if they're not shooting well, they're not going to create points. Kyrie Irving, you know, he could get to the rim for a small guard. He could get to the rim, and he was a good outside shooter as well. He had that really nice combination. And even if he didn't get along that well with LeBron toward the end, they had a nice partnership going. You know, some of our listeners who might be soccer fans can certainly think about, you know, Neymar and Lionel Messi playing for Barcelona, that sort of thing. You know, guys who have a good partnership and work well together. And when they get separated, it's just not the same magic anymore.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with sports reporter Dan Friedel about the NBA playoffs. Dan, let's head west to Oakland, California. That's where the reigning champion Golden State Warriors will host the Houston Rockets on Sunday night in Game 3. This series looks like it might be a little more competitive, a little tighter than the Cavaliers-Celtics series. Warriors-Rockets now even at one game each. Your thoughts on the Western Conference Finals, Dan?
You know, Sonny, I was sitting in the stands of the San Francisco Giants were playing the Cincinnati Reds on Monday night in San Francisco. And between innings, they were showing highlights of the Warriors game against the Rockets. That was the game that the Warriors won, game one of the series. And everybody in the stadium was going crazy. And I really think that there were not as many people in the stands as the Giants would have liked, because a lot of the fans were at home or in sports bars watching the Warriors play. I mean, that city is crazy for the Warriors. You know, San Francisco / Oakland, just separated by a bridge across the bay. I think that those fans are going to be really disappointed if the Warriors don't get back to the finals for another year. But the Rockets are giving them a run. I mean, game one looked like the Warriors were going to cruise through the series. Game two, Houston looked like a completely different team with diversified scoring. I mean, certainly they've got outstanding players in Chris Paul and James Harden, but the other guys stepped up. I mean, this is kind of the thing that the Cleveland Cavaliers don't have, is that they don't have five or six guys capable of scoring 20 points, and the Rockets clearly do. This will be a fun series. This will be a really fun series. If the Rockets can win one game in this run to Northern California, they would have a chance to really take an advantage going back to Houston and potentially close out the series there. So very exciting series. It's just too bad that in the Eastern Conference, it's not quite as exciting to match up with that Western Conference series.
James Harden, the favorite to win this year's Most Valuable Player trophy, Dan. He kind of exited on a quiet note last season when the Rockets were eliminated by the San Antonio Spurs in the playoffs, and Harden did not have a good game that final game. Is this kind of a redemption season for James Harden?
Oh, for sure. I mean, James Harden, you look at him, and he wasn't a huge star coming out of college. I think he kind of was the sort of third-rated player of those great set of players that the Thunder had early on, with Durant and Harden and Russell Westbrook. And then Harden really took his game to another level, and the addition of Chris Paul has really been helpful. Mike D'Antoni's offense has made Harden an even better player. I mean, in January, James Harden looked like he was going to run away with the MVP, and I think that's still the case. I mean, Houston's had one of its best seasons since the days of Hakeem Olajuwon, and I would be surprised if Harden doesn't win the MVP this year. And you know, there's a good chance he'll be in the finals. It's a huge year for Harden, really rising to the top of, you know, the generation of players that he's a part of.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with sports reporter Dan Friedel about the NBA playoffs. Dan, on June 25th, the NBA will hold its annual awards ceremony. The finalists for the various awards were recently announced. I'll skip over the MVP because I think you and I are both in agreement that it'll more than likely go to James Harden. But let's go to Rookie of the Year, Dan. Rookie of the Year, the three finalists are Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz, Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers, and Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Who's your pick, Dan?
Oh, I'm going to go with Ben Simmons. I mean, the story of the Philadelphia 76ers was so great this year. Sure, they kind of got dismantled in the playoffs by the Celtics, but everybody knew that Simmons was had the potential to be an outstanding player. The fact that he had to miss an entire season after getting drafted was too bad. And a lot of opposing fans kind of heckled him, saying that he wasn't an actual rookie because he had a year to learn about life in the NBA. But this was the first time he got on the floor, and he really showed that he was as good as people thought he could be. The other players certainly had great seasons themselves. I mean, Donovan Mitchell made his name known in the playoffs, but I think Simmons really had the full depth of work during the season, and I'm sure he's going to be able to capture the votes that way because the votes are all in already. They don't have anything to do with the playoff performance. So Mitchell's my number two, and Simmons is my number one.
Coach of the Year and the three finalists are Dwayne Casey of the Toronto Raptors, Quinn Snyder of the Utah Jazz, and Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics. You're picked in.
I'm going to go with Stevens there. I mean, you look at the first game of the year, Gordon Hayward goes down with a gruesome injury, big part of the Celtics' plans, and here they are, one of the best teams in the NBA, managed to get through the season, even Kyrie Irving going down right before the playoffs, and here they are. They look like they're going to be in the finals. It's Stevens for me.
Most improved player and the three finalists are Clint Capella of the Houston Rockets, Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets, and Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers. Your pick, Dan.
You know, our listeners should definitely be paying attention to Clint Capella. He grew up in Switzerland, but the son of two African parents. If they're looking for a player to follow in the next stretch of the playoffs, he's the guy. But Victor Oladipo, another player with African roots, is my man for the most improved player. I mean, there was no idea that Indiana was going to be a competitive team. Here they took LeBron and the Cavs down to, you know, down to the wire in the first round of playoffs and didn't even look like Indiana Pacers would be a playoff team at all. And it's all to do with Oladipo. So he's my pick there.
Well, Dan, some final thoughts on the NBA playoffs. We've got about 40 seconds left in the show.
Yeah, I just think this is, you know, it's a little bit bittersweet for the fans in Cleveland who got a chance to see a championship. LeBron James did what he said he was going to do when he came back to Cleveland, and that was bring a championship to Northeast Ohio. I think he's probably going to move on to the next phase of his career unless something outrageous happens where Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavs, pulls off a big deal and is able to get in another outstanding player to team with LeBron. But I wouldn't be surprised to see LeBron in a new uniform next year. And it's kind of tough because the last time that LeBron changed teams, I think his last series was against the Celtics. So enjoy it. I think tell my friends in Cleveland, enjoy seeing LeBron these last few games in Cleveland while you can. It'll be kind of a good memory, but it'll be sad to see him go.
Dan Friedel. Dan, thanks for chatting with us and have a good weekend.
You too, Sonny. Looking forward to talking to you again soon.
And that wraps up the May 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The illegal trafficking of endangered wildlife has escalated to alarming levels. Animals are being killed at unprecedented rate, not at the hands of small-time poachers, but by well-equipped, well-organized, global criminal networks. Wildlife trafficking is a multi-billion dollar transnational organized crime activity and a critical conservation issue. It pushes iconic species to the brink of extinction, restricts economic development, threatens security and stability, and undermines the rule of law, said Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, Richard Glenn. For these reasons, stopping wildlife trafficking is a priority for the U.S. government. In many respects, wildlife trafficking is not much different from other violent, destructive, bloody, and profitable criminal enterprises. So it makes sense that the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, or INL, with its long experience in countering transnational criminal organizations that traffic in drugs, should play a key role in the development and implementation of anti-wildlife trafficking policies around the world. Indeed, INL has found that the tools and resources developed fighting other forms of trafficking can be applied to the wildlife arena, said Mr. Glenn. Criminal organizations move freely across national borders as they traffic poached wildlife from source countries to buyers all over the world. If these criminals cannot find safe haven for their destructive, bloody activities in one jurisdiction, but are able to in others, then our ability to stop them is greatly diminished, said Mr. Glenn. So the U.S. partners with numerous countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and Latin America to help improve their enforcement, investigative, prosecutorial, and legislative capacities, and cooperation within and across governments. We are working to build connections between source regions of Africa, Latin America, and Asia for wildlife products with the demand countries. We do this by funding exchange visits and joint trainings to build trust, exchange information, and eventually take down whole networks of traffickers instead of individual poachers, said Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Glenn. The United States government will continue to lead global efforts to end the gruesome trafficking of elephants, rhinos, and other endangered species. We stand ready to work together with more partner nations in this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. On our next program, we examine U.S. foreign policy under the Trump administration, from reshaping the rules of global trade to exiting the Iran nuclear deal to moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. President Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy often baffles allies and adversaries alike. We'll talk about it with two veteran analysts. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. South Africa has been in the news a lot lately because of a severe drought and a growing water crisis. Charles Iceland, Director of Global and National Water Initiatives at the World Resources Institute, joins Rebecca Ward and I for Press Conference USA to talk about the water crisis and how we might be able to avoid or at least mitigate its effects in the future. Listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.